Well, hello, and welcome to Live From My Office, a podcast hosted by me, Steve Cochran. You know, for years you heard me on the radio, and I'm sure there were many, many times where you thought, boy, if I could just fast forward through some of the crap Steve's talking about, maybe I could get to some good stuff. Well, there were some shows that were like that. I'm not going to deny it. It's not that we weren't trying super hard, but believe it or not, there were some shows where I wasn't as entertaining as I thought I was. So that's the great thing about a podcast. If we have an interview or a conversation or something we're doing that maybe isn't as interesting as the next segment coming up, you could fast forward. And even better, if we get to the end and you think, man, I would like my family or my friends to hear that, you could rewind and tell them exactly where it is. Oh, it's what you always demanded. Radio with a rewind and a fast forward button disguised as a podcast. That's what we're doing here on Live From My Office. And today, sponsored as always by our title sponsor, Team Hochberg. David Hochberg and Team Hochberg, good friends, and all they want to do is save you money. Thank you for sponsoring Live From My Office. We got Dan Hampton on the Bears today. He's not happy. He's not happy about what's going on. He's not happy about what he sees as a future here for the Bears. And why would he be? They were 5-1. It was a fraudulent 5-1. That's proven out since they've lost their last five. Anyway, we'll kick it around with Hamp. And also, a look at what the Democrats think of where we are and where we might be going and what happened and what might happen from two of my favorite Democrats, Eric Edelstein from AL Media and Bridget Gaynor from the Cook County Board. They're both going to be on with me, and we'll talk a little politics as well. But before we get started, a word of caution. Some of you may be familiar with Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. It's a very hot new social network site. It developed out of this bullshit claim that the other social media sites were killing conservative speech. It's not true. When Twitter and that insane-looking CEO of theirs decides to flag a Donald Trump tweet, it's because it's filled with inaccuracies that are flat-out lies. So they're doing the right thing. Mark Zuckerberg hasn't got on board yet, but I promise you he will, because Facebook is running the risk of being in deep trouble in 2021 by way of government intervention unless they start to flag inappropriate material as well. And it's not hard to figure out. I mean, come on. Obviously, you know, violence can't be promoted. You know that abuse of women and children can't be promoted. But threats of violence, much like one of Trump's idiot lawyers made the other day when he said he wanted to drag out and shoot the former head of cybersecurity for the election that Trump fired. You can't have that. So if you're a big public company or a private company hoping to be public and you want to exist going forward, you've got to grow up. And by growing up, that means you have to be able to monitor your content. You've come up with this giant new way of communicating. Sorry, it's your job now. You're going to have to monitor it, which brings me back to Parler. Parler's claim is that they're the only place conservatives can go and say anything they want. Well, it's not working out the way they had hoped. They've had a ton of new subscribers. About 4 million people downloaded the app in the first couple of weeks in November, led in large part by the fact that a lot of conservative voices said, I'm done with Twitter, I'm done with Facebook, meet me over at Parler. And many have. Here's the problem. All the technology that we use on the internet, and I'm not being a wiseass about this, was essentially invented by pornography. Pornography was ahead of the time a long time ago, first with videotapes and then with the development of the internet. Everything from how you pay for items online to the latest bit of technology we haven't even thought of yet, the porn people are working on it. So you could say good for them, or maybe you don't want to say good for them. The fact is they do lead the way, and when they see an opening, they jump in. And Parler is that latest opening. Pardon the terminology. But if, for instance, if you use a hashtag on Parler like sexy Trump girl, you might be thinking, well, it's just an attractive woman that supports Trump. What you'd actually find at hashtag sexy Trump girl is a whole lot of pornography and ways for you to pay for even more pornography. And that's, by the way, just the beginning, because Parler has been inundated with sex merchants and porn businesses taking advantage of the fact that it's blown up and they have no set restrictions on how to control it. Hashtag keep America sexy. Hashtag MILFs for Trump 2020. Just a couple more examples of how porn companies are exploiting parlors' freedom for conservatives. There's really no way to stop it once it starts, including the insanity of QAnon, which is all over Parler as well. And now they got to figure out how to dig their way out of the hole they've created themselves, because there's links for adult websites left and right, and there's offers to pay for sex from specific individuals who develop their own innovative entrepreneurial sex businesses, and you can contact them through Parler as well. Not exactly what they claim to have planned, and the largest problem they have of all is how do you monetize a site that is now filled with porn using you to monetize their porn sites. Sorry, Parler. Good luck with that. We'll take a break. We'll come back. And Dan Hampton will join me next to talk about the Bears. Yikes. On Live from My Office. Live from My Office, sponsored as always by David Hochberg and Team Hochberg at 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com. You can get a free rate quote right there on the website. And by the way, if you go to the website, just flip through the testimonials. You're going to see words like smoothest refi ever, made me feel comfortable, a pleasant experience, made things clear and easy. They were responsible and accessible. Think about those words: smooth, comfortable, pleasant, easy, clear, accessible. I mean, those are words you don't normally associate with a financial transaction involving your house, but you should associate them with David Hochberg. Repeat customers all the time, including my own family. So whether it's an original mortgage, a refi, anything financial about your house, you need to go to David Hochberg, 855-56-DAVID. Or 56david.com. Check it out. Feel free to tell them I sent you. 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com. Dan Hampton joins me. Always a pleasure to have you on, Hamp, and happy holidays.
Well, thank you so much, Steve-O. And I always kind of miss you around Thanksgiving. I always like to see a feast waiting for me, and we used to serve it up every Monday and Friday.
Yep.
And feast on the poor leftovers of the Bears.
Let's talk about that defense right off the bat. You know it better than anybody. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's a confluence of a number of things. You know, Akeem Hicks has, for the last two or three years, been the hidden hand. And I'm not trying to, you know, kind of blow my horn, but it was a similar situation when I played. You know, you got to put a good player inside. Well, he demands double teams and a lot of attention. You know, when he's getting all the attention, everybody else runs around and looks like Superman. So when he's out of the lineup, then the dominoes start to fall. And that was a big part of it. The other side of the coin is, I don't know if, quite honestly, Chuck Pagano has all of his faculties. You know, he's trying to do a bunch of silly things against maybe one of the best quarterbacks of all time. You know, on three-man line, you know, which ensures virtually no pressure, no rush, which lets Aaron Rodgers pat the ball for 7-8 seconds until he finds somebody. And, you know, a number of different things that put us in predictable coverages where Aaron Rodgers was almost in a laconic smile, snickering before the snap of the ball. Like, right. You're going to get in that again? So we've got a whole bunch of things going down. But I guess the big headline is, hey, where's this pass rush? We spent a lot of money. And I don't think, it's wrong of me to say, you know, I busted it real hard for 12 years. And I made it about, you know, a total of $4 million. Well, Akeem Hicks and Robert Quinn are making about three times more than that this year. But Khalil Mack is making almost six times more than that just this season. And yet, in a 60-minute contest, Aaron Rodgers was not touched hurried sack or even breathed on by any of our defense.
So, it's an excuse.
You know, when that happens, I think it's about time to panic.
Yeah, well, it's inexcusable. And for the three guys you mentioned, in particular, Mac, if you get paid the money, you got to show up and you got to make the plays. And he has not been the same guy since the season 2 years ago when he first got started. And frankly, the second half of that season, he wasn't the same guy. So is he one of these athletes that's resting on his wallet, or is there something else going on there?
I don't know. Steve, look, I always thought when you got to a position where you are, like, recognized as one of the preeminent players at your position, a lot of that has to do with internal pride and will.
Yep.
And, you know, my ability to, you know, to assert myself. And we haven't seen it. You know, I mean, I guess when I left in 90, which was a long time ago, I, you know, a lot of people say, why don't you coach? Why don't you coach? And I said, I don't think that I could tolerate this laissez-faire attitude that I see that is becoming so prevalent. And you see it a lot of, in a lot of players, a lot of positions. But when you get a guy like Khalil Mack that, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, he's, you know, he could be a Hall of Famer, but I never saw anything like that in Walter Payton. I never saw anything like that in Richard Danner, Mike Singletary. It was always, where I'm at is good, but I want to be better. I'm going to push the envelope. We haven't seen him push anything in the last year and a half. And you can say what you want, but, you know, at some point, if $22 or $4 million or whatever the hell he makes this year isn't pushing him, you got to push him off on somebody else, because you can't, you know, he's making a fourth of the salary cap or whatever, and he's not getting it done.
Well, and it does seem like it's few and far between the guys who play for the pride of their name in the game, but there are guys out there who don't take plays off, guys like Aaron Donald. I've never seen him take a playoff, and it's one of the reasons he's one of the best.
There you go. And, you know, if you go back to Sunday night and you grade that defense, I'm sure, you know, a lot of guys were thought that they were busting it, but there's a lot of guys trying to avoid contact. You know, Eddie Jackson has been basically the same kind of player. We haven't seen him bust a grape in the last year and a half. Kyle Fuller started the season off with a bang. The first 5 weeks of the season, he was the best corner in football. And since then, it's almost like this mystical protection veil is dropped over them when they start thinking, oh, if I make it, you know, if I throw my arms around a running back, I could hurt my shoulder, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to kind of throw a body block at him and hope I get him down. Well, you know, you start whiffing, running backs start noticing that on film, and then guess what? All they do is juke you. So, you know, it's like you always, you know, the thread on the sweater, and your mom always said, don't pull it, don't pull it. Why? It'll unravel the whole thing. Well, this defense is starting to unravel because little by little, a lack of discipline, a lack of attention, a lack of motivation, they're just starting to show a lot of cracks. And what we thought we had, I don't think we have no more.
Yeah, because the defense had to hold up the offense because the offense isn't there. Now, having said that, I still think Nick Foles is an NFL quarterback, and I still think he ought to be the guy. But there's nobody from Joe Montana to Johnny Unitas to Tom Brady who can deliver the football when he's got a second or two as opposed to the seven pats that Aaron Rodgers was getting. So what's wrong with the offensive line?
Well, it's almost been like a patchwork, hand-me-down that everybody else gets attention before the offensive line. Now, they drafted Cody White here in the second round. They drafted James Daniels in the second round. For the large part of October, November, both those guys were out of the picture. The two tackles, Matthew has been out now for almost a month, and he was actually playing the best of any of them. And Charles Leno, when he got his big contract for almost $10 million a year, I think it's nine something, you thought, okay, here's a guy that's going to say, all right, I worked myself into a position where now I can make great money and be a cornerstone, figuratively and literally, of this football team, and work hard about it. And it looks to me like he lost his map to the weight room. Yeah, I mean, it looks like he's gained weight. It's in the wrong place. His technique, his fundamentals are shabby at best. And guess what? You start getting your ass wore out. Everybody in the league is going to, it's a fight at the bat rack to get over there and line up on you. So, you know, we're paying the dividends of Ryan Pace essentially saying, I'm not worried about the offensive line. And sooner or later, here it comes back and it's biting us.
Well, and you mentioned the general manager. Look, he has not gotten it done on any level. And Mrs. McCaskey, God bless her. You know, she's not running this team day to day, nor should she be. But at some point, somebody in the, you know, in the family that still has a say in this thing has to stand up and go, do we want to win or don't we want to win? I mean, time's short. It's 16 games in a season. You know, maybe we got the wrong head coach. Maybe we got the wrong general manager. We don't change them for the sake of change, but the deal is you got to win in this league. And this team was smoke and mirrors when they were 5-1.
Yeah, you're correct. You know, Steve, somewhere along the way, you know, I got into football late, so I didn't have all the conditioning and the mind-numbing cliches that, you know, kids get when they're in 7th, 8th, 10th grade, whatever. I always wanted to win. Yes, I want to win. Everybody that we drafted, signed as a free agent my 12 years, every damn one of them walked in and said, yeah, I want to win. I found out there's a difference between saying I want to win and I can't live with losing. And there was a point about my second year that I realized that I can't live with losing. And then everything became much clearer. And I realized that at some point, everybody, you know, it's like putting your hand in a bucket of water. You displace the part of the team, you're part. And when you're out, you're out. But you desperately fight to keep your hand in the bucket to be a part of it. And I realized there's only so much room, and I don't have time to waste on fools and posers. And at some point, you need a certain, what should I say, definer in the organization that can tell the difference between somebody that can't live with losing and somebody that just says they want to win. And Jim Finch was that kind of guy. Buddy Ryan was that kind of guy. Mike Ditka was that kind of guy. We don't have anybody. Nobody. Nobody.
Well, and it's not an accident, right? I mean, you look around the league, Pete Carroll is a guy that's almost 70 years old. He wants to win as much now as he did when he started. And big surprise, Seattle's number one in the West. Aaron Rodgers takes it personally when somebody misses a route, or certainly when he loses a game. He takes it personally. And the winning isn't accidental. All the way around the league, everybody that wins, they win because that's what they're there for. And their talent they bring to it, great. But if you don't have it between the ears and in your heart, it's not going to happen.
Tell me who on this team, coach, administration, or player, has a hard time going home and going to sleep at night after not only a bad performance, not only a loss, but an embarrassment like Sunday night. I'd have a hard time. You know, maybe Akeem Hicks. Maybe. I'm just saying, on my team, we had a busload.
Right.
And not every one of the guys on that roster was a blue blood that was a believer that would cut his arm off. But I'll tell you this, we had more than most anybody else for a long time. And unfortunately, what I'm trying to get to is you got to have a finder, somebody that can find those people. And Ryan Pace, he went and had a dinner with Trubisky, and he drove a beater car up. So he's thinking, oh, this kid's hungry. And he's going to be a great story. But what, hey, I'm just telling you, if you want to get confused about some things, listen to Mitch Trubisky in his post-game comments. I mean, I'm thinking, what the hell are you talking about? What are you thinking about? He was talking before the game about the defense is playing good, and, you know, I take pride in the fact that I was out there running the scout team again. And I'm thinking, what kind of bullshit is this?
Yeah, it's all cliches.
This is the guy. Now, think about this. Patrick Mahomes is one in a hundred quarterbacks. He may be the best we've ever seen, and God bless him. We'll see Deshaun Watson in 2 weeks. And by the way, I'm just telling you, if everybody's going, oh, well, Houston, who cares? We'll beat them. Well, guess what? Remember what happened when Mahomes came in here last year. He didn't have the greatest game, but late in the game when he scored a touchdown or whatever, remember he was counting on his fingers?
Yep.
Basically giving a subliminal message to Ryan Pace, oh, you thought number 10 was a lot better than me? Well, suck on this. Well, you don't think Deshaun Watson is going to do the same thing?
Yeah, especially in his hometown.
I'm just telling you. Well, all I'm trying to tell you is, I mean, you think it's going to get easier? It's only going to get harder. And unfortunately, we don't have anybody that can identify the people that can get us out of this mess. So we're in a bit of a fix.
Now, you got a couple of wild card slots this year, but I don't see any reason to think that even though it's a giant traffic jam, that the Bears are going to pull up their big boy pants, as you like to say, and be able to catch the Rams or Tampa Bay or deal with that. You know, Arizona's in the way. 49ers are still in the mix. The Vikings are there. Atlanta could even make a run. That's a lot of teams to climb over when you can't figure out which way to get out of the locker room.
Nick, a great point. And I think back when we were 5-1, and anyone listening to the Hamp and OB show, we were telling you, okay, says you're 5-1. Okay, so you're 5-1. But let me tell you something. Pull back the curtain. You got a lot of issues here you need to worry about, you need to correct, you need to think about. But, of course, Matt Nagy was too busy telling everybody in the press conference on Thursday that week, oh, we're 5-1. We're 5-1. We're five. You know, unfortunately, he gets seduced by this. You know, this arrogance of a 5-1 record, and thinks that he's driving a Ferrari when actually it's a Hugo. And now, after five straight losses, we're starting to figure out where the jack is, how to put oil in it, and we're trying to figure out certain things we should have figured on. And had to try to diagnose a month ago, to kind of in a preemptive way, why is the offensive line so bad? We need to make better decisions on who we're going to have, how we're going to block. We're going to do this on defense. What happens if team goes down? We need these other guys to be able to function inside. How are we going to accommodate? We're going to run stunts. We're going to have line charges. We're going to have different blitzes set up where we can cover. No, everybody was happy and smoking cigars at 5-1, and now, guess what? We're breathing exhaust fumes.
Is there any – we're going to run out of time here quickly, but is there anything from your day that you can bring up that gives us some perspective from the player's side of what a leader really does? Because, you know, there's all this stuff that happens in the locker room. You know, you go players-only meetings and things of that nature. But sometimes – you know, you hear about guys, you got to bust a few chairs. You got to call everybody out on their manhood. You got to tell everybody to stand up and do their job. Isn't there still a place for that in the game?
Absolutely. But it's almost like nobody has time for that. They've got to make sure they get their Instagram post up. And I'll tell you this. In my mind, okay, when I saw Trubisky out there running his mouth before the game, this individual that has embarrassed himself with how bad he plays and how he can't improve, how he can't eliminate simple idiotic mistakes on a week-to-week basis, and yet he's out there acting like he's, you know, Tom Brady giving a fire and brimstone speech when He played one play against the Saints, had something go wrong with his shoulder, never said a word about it. He had to fly to L.A. to get a doctor to look at it, and was on the injured report for 3 weeks over some mysterious invisible injury, and now he comes back, and now he's... See, so what I'm saying is, there's a lot of ways that a good football team finds leaders and responds to issues and challenges. But I'm looking at this team, everything they're doing is back-asswards. And until they rectify it, it's going to go in the wrong direction.
And this all comes back to my least favorite topic, and that's management. This is how I got fired a lot, kids, because I couldn't take losing in my world either. And I couldn't take watching destruction around me, so I always spoke up. I wish I saw somebody on this team. I wish you saw somebody on this team who was willing to lay it all on the line and do that off the field as well as on. But for the time being, I think it's a rough last few weeks for the Bears.
Yep, buckle up. You know, here's the thing. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but those guys out in Vegas, well, they're still afloat with the casinos closed down, so they know what they're doing. Well, the Bears opened as a 4-point favorite. Now it's down to 3, 2.5 some places. So what they are saying is this team that was 5-1 just a blink of the eye ago is now being, you know, discounted in a contest against a football team that has been horrid and so bad it got its general manager and its head coach fired last weekend. And yet, smart people are saying, we think Detroit is a better team than the Bears. That's why the line. So what I'm saying is, a lot of what's going on with the Bears, they're doing things and going in the wrong direction. So hopefully they'll find some lightning in a bottle and find a way to win and start getting back on the winning path. But it's going to take a lot better effort from not only the coaches but the players. And let's hope they do. We love them. We want them to win.
Absolutely.
At some point, you got to put the cheese on the cracker, my friend.
That's
and with
it.
That, I'll leave you with my Thanksgiving thought.
The great Dan Hampton. Always a pleasure to have you on Live from My Office. Thank you, my friend. You've heard me talk to him many, many times over the years on the radio. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about David Hochberg. David Hochberg and Team Hochberg. It's not his slogan, but it ought to be. David Hochberg, he just wants to save you a little money. The long form of David Hochberg is easy to access. It's every interview he's ever done, or it's an interview he did with me, an interview or two or three, as a matter of fact, that you can find on my sponsors page at CochranShow.com. But my family has done a lot of business with David Hochberg. I have as well. I did a refi on my home equity loan. My daughter just finished up a refi on her house after doing the original mortgage with David Hochberg, and my sister's done two of those. Why is that important to you? Well, if I'm going to let my family get in business with David Hochberg, I certainly am willing to recommend it to you. I salute his continued support to the military, to the police, to the fire departments. And I'm telling you, every aspect of owning a home, he's got you covered. David Hochberg, Team Hochberg, 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com. All right, this is Live from My Office with a couple of good friends of mine. That's Bridget Gaynor. Bridget, wave to the people.
How are you? Good to see everybody.
The Zoom wave is always so normal. And Eric Edelstein as well. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well as well, and hope you guys had a nice Thanksgiving, such yes. That it was. So, all right, now we haven't talked publicly since election night. Bridget, let me start with you. Where were you? By the way, I know I've not made my opinion and my feelings on Donald Trump clear. I'm glad he lost. But where were you, and who were you watching the returns with, if you were?
You know, where I love to be on election night, on my couch, you know, with food and my kids. And we were sitting around watching. I will tell you, it was fairly roller coaster. I remember going to bed finally and thinking like, wait a minute, this isn't happening again. Is it that we're like, we think we're going to win and then we lose. And I woke up at like 6:30 in the morning And I, my daughter came into my room and she's like, "Mom, tell me this is going to be okay. Like, tell me this is going to be okay. And I said, "I don't know. Let's keep watching." And then, you know, it started to feel better. And then, you know, the Saturday after was my birthday. And I thought, okay, great. I got a present for my birthday. It all worked out good. So I'll never forget it.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
That is pretty great. Same thing for you, Eric, on the couch.
Yeah, I was with my wife. She was doing some work and, you know, she would pop her head up every once in a while to check on what was going on. And when the roller coaster started going on the downward, she heard me on the phone expressing a little bit of doubt. And I looked down, she was actually sitting on the floor doing some work. I looked down and her head was in her hands. And then she just got up and she said, "I'm going to bed." And I said, "I really think it's going to be okay." But she goes, "Can you promise me that?" And I said, "No, I can't promise you that." So yeah. I called a couple of operatives who I trust in Wisconsin and they told me they thought it would be okay. So then I felt like, you know, the post-election ballot thing would come in, but then you worry about the chaos that Trump could and obviously has tried to create.
I will say that I did call. I called someone in Pennsylvania and someone in Michigan who I trust a lot. The guy in Pennsylvania at like 7 o'clock on Tuesday night said, "We are 100% winning this for Biden. It's going for him completely." That was before they even called Michigan or Wisconsin. And the whole time he's like, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. It's going to be okay." And they were right. And, you know, they were more than right. But,
I think it was poorly reported in a lot of places. The one thing that got me is when Florida was clearly going Trump's way, because it looked like that Biden was certainly in a position where he could possibly take it. And if he took Florida, we thought that would tip the dominoes for the rest of the night. But we knew all along that the mail-in votes would heavily favor the Democrat side because Democrats voted by mail. And we knew it would take a while to count those because we have these ridiculous state-by-state systems all over the country. So it kind of went, Eric, and this is your job, but you guys do the polling and the campaign management. It kind of played out the way you thought it would, right?
It did. But see, Trump knew that too early on, like months before the election, which is why he tried to discredit the ballots, why he tried to say there should be a winner declared on election night. So it played out exactly the way it was anticipated, but it played into his false narrative that he wanted to create it. And I said for a number of weeks, if all the ballots are counted, I believe that Biden will win a comfortable margin. I worry about the chaos that the president of the United States who is amoral and a criminal is not afraid to wield the power of that government to do whatever it takes. And that's a very frightening prospect. So it played out the way it has. I'll tell you the one thing, a lot of discussion about you know, stress testing the American system, and there are certainly a lot of cracks in it, but you do take some heart in these Republican judges, particularly the ones appointed by Trump, who have really excoriated the Republican attacks on the election system. And that does give you some hope that it's all not just a rigged partisan game at this point.
Well, the notion that you could rig a presidential election is idiotic. It's just there's Republicans and Democrats involved in state party operations in every state. There would have to be a massive conspiracy that you couldn't make up in a James Bond movie to pull it off. I mean, I'm not saying there's not occasional voting irregularities. There's machines that sometimes fail. There's no logical conclusion that says it could be pulled off.
But if you were in an autocratic regime, they could get the courts to rule your way, get local judges, local officials to stop counting. And that's how Trump treated. I mean, for Trump to be calling the governor of Georgia and telling him to, you know, force the Secretary of State to not count the law. I mean, the law doesn't even work that way. The governor doesn't have that power, but he's acting like he's in an autocratic regime. So the fear wasn't that there's that kind of widespread corruption. I think the fear was, will the system hold against the attacks on the integrity of the process?
Well, especially with the strong courage shown by the Republican members of the United States Senate. Couldn't be more proud. All right. So this moves forward to the obvious question from my side of this. As you know, I believe the far right and the far left are the problem, not the solution. What does Biden have to do to manage that going in, where the quote progressive left doesn't try to override the left middle that he would like to ride to make this not a presidency about Democrats, but a presidency about the United States? Either one of you.
I mean, look, I think he has to think about these cabinet appointments as someone who can be a good leader of all the people who are actually going to do the work below them. Symbolism is important. I think the diversity stuff's super important. I love that there's women. I love there's people of color. I think that's great. I am not a fan of spending any capital on appointing anyone to be a cabinet position that brings a lot of controversy, because it's a distraction. Most of the work is done by people in the bowels of these organizations. You need a strong leader to execute, and you need people who, I mean, the thing I notice in politics all the time is, don't create a situation in which someone doesn't want you to be successful because they lose politically, or you've made them have to give an enemy of theirs a victory. That's within your control. So there's so much work to be done in these agencies, because some of them have been totally abused. The Department of Labor has been like turned into this witch hunt of worker rights. Tons of stuff needs to happen there. Obviously everything on the financial side, but these agencies, we need to create some calm. We need to get things done. Obviously we need to do infrastructure that the last 87 presidents in a row have said, now it's time to actually do it. So that is like, don't pick battles that aren't important is my, you know,
Well, you sound like you have a specific concern in your head. Is there somebody you're thinking of that he could appoint?
Well, I mean, look, I think Nir Tandon's terrific. I also know that you know, a lot of times people have used their Twitter feed as, you know, as a venting post. Maybe that's okay. I don't think there's anyone in particular. I know various people, whether it's the defense secretary. I know that conversations about ROM have been swirling. All these people are competent. The question is, if you're trying to lead an orchestra, how do you become most successful? I mean, Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. My take's slightly different, less on the personnel than on the policy. As important as racial justice, environmental issues, issues of healthcare, there's really nothing more important than the economic justice that we lack in this country. And the fact that I think this pandemic has exposed how great a tale of two cities this country is. The people who mm-hmm. are suffering both health-wise and economically versus the people who have access to medical care and are able to keep their jobs. So my concern for our party, and I think, frankly, I'm encouraged by the Biden economic appointments.
Yes.
Because I think they're a group that understands progressive economics. And look, this country, to me, you know, I'm a Democrat because I think Democrats balance the free market with appropriate regulation. And mm-hmm. this country gets out of whack when one of those things dominates too much. I think the mm-hmm. far left on our party wants it to be too much government. And I think the far right on their party wants it to be no government. And I think the best presidents, Adams, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, they all understood capitalism is a powerful engine, but it's got to be regulated. And I think that if we're going to really do something about income inequality, then Biden has to have a very aggressive economic agenda. And that's, we should be talking about racial justice. We should be talking about global warming. We should be talking about these issues that maybe want to get labeled as left wing. But we need to talk about economic justice. And I think the Biden administration will do very well in the Democratic Party if we can kind of refocus the discussion on this economic stuff. What we've done as Democrats, and you saw it in the polling, even, you know, Trump, even in this environment, had an edge on the economy. And, you know, mm-hmm. we've had 25 years where a lot of voters vote against their economic interest in voting Republican because they're voting values rather than economics. And that's been a real problem for our party. I think we can get a lot of those voters back, and I think Biden got some of them, if we lay out a real economic agenda that impacts working class people's lives in a positive way.
Yep. You know, we live in an America that's so influenced by social media, and my concern is Biden's not inaugurated until 12 noon on the 20th And if there's a lot of negativity about even discussions of selections now, this would be the circular firing squad the Democrats always get credit for forming. And as you said, Bridget, symbolism matters. Is that a big deal, or will that work itself out?
Which part? The idea that they're attacking each other?
Yeah, exactly. Before he's had his change of address cards done.
Look, I think leaders kind of attract, but then also are able to mandate certain norms of behavior. And I think that the people that are both looking, that come with Biden because they're attracted to him, as well as the people he's going to bring in, I think we'll try to avoid that type of thing. I think they'll be more pragmatic than ideological. Now, what happens to other members? Who knows? But at least he can go forward with an administration that feels like it's buttoned up and together.
Yeah, I agree with that. The optics of it matter, as you say, Steve, because it can derail a lot of these appointments. And my concern, and even the premise of the way you asked the question, is shows how startlingly successful the Republicans have been at defining this debate, as if the left has, a fringe element and the right doesn't. There's two members
Which is really crazy. Yeah.
I mean, there's two members of QAnon who think that Democrats are pedophiles and there's a secret ring to control the world by kidnapping children and abusing them, that are in the United States Congress, and Republicans are going to allow them to sit on committees and take votes. Now, look, I'm not a socialist. I think our party should not be talking about socialism. I think the things they'd say aren't even really socialist. And I think it's horrible. I think that whoever came up with the term defunding the police, as if that's somehow even reasonable. I think the policies underneath that in reallocating resources are legitimate debates that we should be having. But, I was with a guy not too long ago who said to me before the election, well, if Democrats win the presidency in the Senate, are they going to enact this agenda? And I said, well, what's this agenda? And he goes, well, the agenda. I go, no, I don't know. What are you talking about? He said, the Bernie Sanders, AOC agenda. And I said, well, that's not the Democratic Party's agenda. And he goes, well, yeah, it is. So my point being, we've done such a poor job at pushing back on this narrative that's what defines a Democratic Party. And if we want to really have a fair fight, let's talk about the crazies on their side and how out of the mainstream they are. And it's going to be up to the Biden administration and the Democratic Party to, I think, redefine themselves.
Well, there may not be a more self-serving industry than Congress or Washington, D.C. politics. How many Republicans are going to get in the boat that makes them relevant in a Biden 4-year run, as opposed to staying on the far right and trying to get Fox away or Newsmax attention? Because I think a lot of them are ready. I think a lot of Republicans are going to want credit for saying, that I didn't say it out loud, but I was thinking that Trump was out of line. That nonsense. And I think they all should go down with the ship for not calling it out when it happened. But I think you're going to see a fair amount of that, especially on the Senate side, where they're going to come forward.
I think you're an optimist, Steve. And I can't believe I'm saying
there's no question about that.
Because I don't buy that. I don't buy that because I think Trump's not going away. And I think he's going to hold that party hostage. And I think anyone that tries to work with Biden, he's going to try to hold their feet to the fire. And I think, politicians are, no offense, Bridget, self-serving to the extent that they have to respond to their constituents. So it's not necessarily a negative thing. And those Republicans are going to worry about their primary base. And Trump's going to be out there. And I think he's going to be trying to continue this polarization. So I'm not optimistic. I'm just not.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's the allure of the, 25 seconds on cable news or the pithy statement. It's like catnip. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the movie Social Dilemma, where it just talks about, you've had the smartest people in the world who think about how to persuade people through technology, who are sitting in a room thinking, how do I get more and more people to respond to this device in their hand or this thing on the TV? And so politicians are not immune from that. They look at the number of likes and Twitter followers and they're thinking that that's real. It's kind of like the debate that always goes on in campaigns, like, do yard signs vote? Do they not vote? Well, do Twitter likes vote? They may or may not, but people, it's like a drug that they can't wean themselves off of. because in the vast space that exists in the time between one election and then the other election, how am I feeding the beast of like, am I okay? Do people love me? Am I going to get reelected? And I think that that's where social media has stepped in. And so I think that it's not, if you ask them a big question of, hey, do you want to work with the president? It's today, do you want to be on Fox or do you want to work with the president? You know, they'll take today, I want to be on Fox. I might work with a guy later, but they can't say no to the thing that's right in front of them.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, Bridget raises, this goes to this issue of kind of history repeating itself in that our last Gilded Age, you know, you had these mega industries, railroads, oil, steel, that had monopolies and controlled huge portions of the economy until the federal government, Teddy Roosevelt, stepped in and said, we have to do something about this. Right now, the amount of power that these social media giants and Google have over our economy. I mean, think about this for a second. 90% of all the searches for knowledge, 90% are controlled by Google, a completely unregulated private sector business that controls 90% of the information that we look for online. And to think for a moment that that's completely unregulated, like, look, I don't think anybody would sit around and say it was a mistake to break up the railroads or break up Standard Oil back in the day. And I think people are going to look back on this era and say, how could you allow these giants to operate completely unfettered from any government regulation? It's just not good. It's not healthy. And it's destructive. No.
Well, I mean, look, it scares me for the politicians. It scares me as a parent even more. Because you think you have a child, you don't even have the context to say, look, if you want to talk to me about, you know, drugs or sex or bullies or parties, like I got some roadmap to talk to you about those things. You want to talk to me about, are we on still?
I think we lost.
Well, maybe we keep going. Sorry, guys. We thought we had a little bit of technical difficulties. But if you want to talk to me about how to manage social media, as I've handed you this massive computer to make your way with, then I don't even have the ability to advise you as your mother.
That's right.
So my biggest concern is that it's just the sucking you in. And we have the smartest people with unlimited resources behind how to get people to focus on these things and on the negativity. And I think that they're not making a holistic decision. They're saying, right now I want to be on the news. Tomorrow, maybe I'll be a better person.
Well, and the new and like you said, what is sensational is what gets attention on the news and online. So the more outrageous a thing you say, the more attention you're going to get. And then the cycle just repeats itself. So, boy, I'm exhausted just thinking about the Biden administration and all they have to do. So, you know, we're in a situation in politics. I'll just tell you really quickly that right after the election, Facebook and YouTube owned by Google said, we're not going to run any political ads starting the day after the election. They were worried about disinformation and all that kind of stuff. And so you went from a situation where a huge amount of the dialogue, paid dialogue in campaigns was on these two platforms. And then all of a sudden you have these Georgia runoffs and you're not allowed to advertise on those platforms anymore. It's sort of ludicrous that these two companies are in control of the political discourse so much and can control it. Be like, you know, on the public airwaves, television stations saying, we're not going to take any advertising. We're not going to allow for the First Amendment to be spoken. It just cries out for more attention, more of a kind of balance between the market and government, government regulation. And hopefully that will happen.
Well, there's definitely going to be an antitrust push with Google. What do you do to rein in Mark Zuckerberg so he can't take his, hey, I'm just a little guy from Harvard who wanted to meet girls and this whole thing got out of hand, but who am I to tell people what to say?
Right.
You know, well, at $225 a share or whatever Facebook's currently trading at and the 60 or 70 billion you're sitting on, you will take care of business. How do you rein those two in?
Well, you know, there was a fascinating New Yorker piece few weeks ago about the hypocrisy of them pretending that they take hate speech down and finding excuses for putting Bolsonaro or Trump or any of these autocratic leaders' comments or some of these outrageous, hateful groups on the air. Because as Bridget said, you know, attention is the currency of the internet. And if they have these huge groups, they're able to sell that attention to advertisers and make a ton of money. So I think that has to be looked at along with Google. And, you know, they may have to give up a little bit of profit, but that's okay. So did Standard Oil, and so did Carnegie Steel, and, you know, so did the railroads, but they did just fine in the long run. So,
yeah, I think it's all about, and then that article is great, but it talks about the Section 230, which is this arcane part of code. And what the section says is like, hey, you're just a platform. So if somebody comes up here and says, I hate fill in the blank, or kill all those people, or they're running a pedophile ring out of a pizza store, hey, it's not your fault. You can't help that they're crazy. But oh, by the way, you can make money when somebody looks at ads after they watch the pedophile in the pizza store story. And not only that, but I'm going to like target other people to send that to, and then they're going to watch it, and I'm going to make the money off those ads. It's like saying a newspaper can't be held responsible for what's on the front page.
Right.
It's like saying a car company can't be responsible if the brakes don't work and they run over somebody in an intersection. I mean, that's ludicrous. I am a big believer that you got to figure out a way to make the market do the work for you. It's like, you got to be Tom Sawyer in this, and you cannot be trying to do all the work. Any regulation that you devise will be slaughtered in the lobbying process. So put that aside. Then they're going to figure out a way to get around it. What you need to do is say to them, you can be held accountable and sued for the stuff that you put on there. Because guess what they're going to do then? Figure out a way to not put it on. And then you're unleashing the power of the trial bar and class action lawsuits in the interests of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that you don't know. And you can't possibly understand how they would come up and devise a way to limit the negative output of these groups. So don't try to come up in a hothouse of the Senate Judiciary Committee room, because you people have no idea how to stop this behemoth. You need to unleash that. And this is where, you know, and this is why I wouldn't be for tort reform if it was the last thing issue on earth, because this is exactly what you need our legal system to do. And so you take away Section 230, and something tells me all of a sudden these incredibly smart people are going to figure a lot of things out on their own.
Yeah, it's a great point. And when I say regulation, I mean it in the broadest sense, like not just a bunch of
limit behavior.
Their behavior, use the market, use the courts, whatever you got to do, but not just let them be unfettered as they are today.
Yep. That is, to me, the most important thing that could happen in terms of social media and a piece of legislation.
Well, how much money are you on that lobbying campaign?
Brutal.
In the middle of that brilliant point by both of you, in the last 30 seconds, we lost the record. Eric, I threw the control over to you. So if you would throw the control back to me.
Sure, I can try.
Then we can save this. I'll do an end. We can do an ending here and get you out of here. Sorry about the tech side of this.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, we're not done yet. The big closing still to come.
How do I switch it back to you, Steve?
I believe if you click on leave in the lower right, it should tell you who is the host of the meeting, or the call, I should say.
It says end meeting for all or leave meeting. Should I just leave the meeting and come back?
You're the host if it says end meeting for all.
Yeah.
So click leave meeting. Make me the host.
Okay.
And then just sign right back.
You host. And then assign and leave.
And then Bridget and I will be talking about you until you come back.
Viciously. Make it fast.
So, all right. So.
Okay.
Haven't had a single problem with Zoom. And now look at this.
Boom.
So you good otherwise?
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, I had to have some medical stuff done, which is kind of a pain in the neck, but everything, that's fine. And I'm looking forward to Christmas. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm looking forward to Christmas, and it'll be fun, you know.
I like that take. I'm on board with you. Christmas should be fun. By the way, if you're not having fun at Christmas, just come by and see Abigail. She makes everything better.
I know. Well, I have a niece who is a year and a half old. Her name is Geraldine, so we call her Baby G. Oh my God, I could eat her. I mean, like, it's just too much. And this is the thing, that's a great thing about being the oldest of a big family, because I have a kid in college, but I have sisters with infants, you know? And so it's so fun to go over there. They're great. Her son, who's 4, wrote a letter to Santa And he's like, I want a microscope because I have no microscopes. And the number of microscopes I have is zero. I mean, it was like a 7-line thing about having no microscopes. So I just, you know, you can't make this stuff up. Kid,
being able to see a little kid's take on the world again is just so cool for me. You know,
it's great.
Because you forget. Yeah. All right. Two last things here. Again, the guests are Eric Edelstein from AL Media. And by the way, congratulations, Eric. Polling shall live on. It turns out that you guys did get the numbers, process them appropriately in the big picture. And Bridget Gaynor from the Cook County Board, and also a big shout, as I said earlier, at Aon. How much of, we were talking about social media, and what has to be done to get Facebook in line and maybe Google and the others as well, and to get Jack Dorsey from Twitter, some sort of guy to shave his beard so he doesn't look like a serial killer. How much of this is old guys in the Senate don't understand the internet or social media, so they're not going to be able to fix this, even with younger staffs telling them that they should?
I don't know if it's that. I do think, look, I remember having an experience with Mayor Daley that when you talk to him about like construction, roads, sidewalk, parks, bridges, schools, any of that stuff, he's like, boom, boom, boom. Then the guys, they called it MIT at the time, Management Information Technologies. And no one really understood what that was. And that guy would come in and do a presentation and you could tell like he wasn't getting a lot of good questions because A, it was boring, and B, no one really understood it. So I think that nobody's going to be lining up with like, there's no Sheldon Whitehouse poster board for social media, or like there, you know, there's not that type of thing. Having said that, I think the bigger fear is the obscene number of lobbyists, and they don't have to talk to these old guys. They just have to hire every single person that's ever worked for them. That's my bigger worry about it.
Yeah.
And so this has to be something they take to the American people, because any parent with a kid who spends tons of time on a phone knows it isn't good. So I can't imagine it's that hard to make that case.
Yeah, no, I do think there is a bit of, they don't really understand it, and the industry makes it as opaque as possible to create a barrier to entry. So I have a proposal, Steve, that I think all the members of Congress on those oversight committees should have their kids or grandkids sit in on the days that they question tech leaders, and they'll get much better questions. And, you know, the internet will work better for sure. So that's my plan.
Yeah, I completely agree. Quick thing on Springfield. It looks like Mike Madigan will not be the speaker. Obviously, he's like Glenn Close at the end of Fatal Attraction, risen before and could rise again. But if he's not, what's that going to look like in Springfield with the Democrats in charge and Madigan not being the guy at the top of that list?
I think it'll be chaos. I mean, anytime you go from a longtime situation of strong control, we certainly saw that in the city, even with Rahm post-Daley, you get a level of... dispersion of power, which isn't necessarily unhealthy, but I think can be disconcerting and can be disruptive in a lot of ways. So there's no clear person that, if in fact he does not win the speakership, would get it. And I think it's going to be very chaotic. I tell you, one person who you got to look to who would have increased power in that situation would probably be the new Senate president, Don Harmon, because, just by virtue of being there and having a caucus that he's in control of, I think it would do that. But I'm no Springfield expert, but I think anytime you have the end of an era of one person with that much power, you end up with a lot of dispersion of power for a while. And what's the old line, Bridget? Like, you don't want to be the person after the person. You want to be the person after the person after the person. So we'll see.
Yeah.
You got anything else on that? Or you agree, Bridget?
No, I agree. I mean, I think that I think it'll be really interesting to see how that caucus comes together and chooses someone to lead them, what they look for. I mean, you've got people like Kelly Burke who have a really even temperament and works really hard. And you've got obviously members of the Black Caucus, Latino Caucus. There's a lot of people who've been waiting a long time to take that gavel. So the question is going to be who can put together the votes. And some of that is going to be driven by who's going to let people have a little bit more running room than they've had up until now. And the person who can maintain order, but still give people a little bit more power and direction and control than they've had, that may be the one who puts it together. So it'll be interesting to see.
I will go back to my idealism to wrap this up. I think we're going to be fine. We're all going to be all fluffy and good. And 2021 is going to, it's going to be kumbaya all year long. Yeah, I know what you're thinking.
What's happened to you?
And I bumped my head. No, I'm very excited about the possibility of retaking this country in a bloodless coup called a vote that went the way the people wanted it to go. And reaching out to the 70 million who didn't see it that way, I think is very smart. I agree with you, Bridget. I like what Biden's done as far as potential appointments are. You know, who he wants is his team. I think there's a lot of positives here, so I'm encouraged.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Look, the man has had, he's had a lot of personal tragedy. He's had a lot of heartbreak, and that's very centering. And, you know, it gives you a lot of humanity and a lot of humility. And we could use a lot of both of those right now. So it's a good moment.
Well said. All right, before we go, I'm live from my office. A couple of reminders. Again, rate, review, listen to this podcast right here where you are, or tell your friends wherever they get their podcast, they can get it as well. And as always, you can email me at thecochranshow@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone we've done, every episode so far, and all the episodes of the future are always in the archives at cochranshow.com. All right, cool charity this week. Not that they're all not great, but this one really works in a lot of ways. It's called Holiday Project. Holiday Project was an independent 501(c) all the way through last year. They've now folded their operation into something called Create the Good. That's an arm of AARP. And Create the Good allows you to do your own holiday project. What does Holiday Project mean? It's not making cookies. It could be part of it. But it's a volunteer opportunity for you to visit people who can be lonely through the holiday season. Holiday Project was designed for that specific purpose. And to give you a spot on example, it's you get a group of friends together to go to a local nursing home and you talk and listen to the older folks there who may not have as many visitors as they like. Now, I know what you're saying. You're going, Steve, it's COVID. They're not going to let me in. No, you know what? They may not. But there are folks who would love to see her, to have a visitor or more than one visitor who can do window visits. Can then? I don't want to be too hokey here, but how great would it be if you got a bunch of carolers together and you went around to the various windows at a nursing home and sang Christmas carols? It's not out of the question at all. So even though COVID is keeping people out, you can still get in with Holiday Project to do some real good. Create the Good is the specific link at AARP. Go to holidayproject.info. That's holidayproject.info. Scroll down to the bottom. There's a link to the AARP arm of this, and it'll take you through everything. In addition, I will post those notes on cochranshow.com. They're up by now, so you can jump over there and read through them as well. Whether it's you, five of your friends, or maybe 100 folks you want to get together, think about window visits at nursing homes as just one way you can help just by volunteering your time. And you're going to feel good, too. It's called Holiday Project. It's our charity of this particular episode. All right, we got to go. But before we go, I invite you to come back because we do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we're glad you're here to hear it. I'm Steve Cochran. Thank you for listening to Live from My Office.
30 years plus on the airwaves. You have turned your dial to me. Now you're tuned into my podcast. It's live from my office, Steve. From Ithaca, New York, to Carolina South, W. Cochran Steve. From Minneapolis, and then Chicago twice, top-rated shows achieved. Sit back, relax, and now listen to my show. When or wherever you are,
because you're on the go. A-list celebs with some laughs and great info. Live from my office, the Steve Cochran Podcast Show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No better place to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Subscribe and like for free.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Live from my office, Steve.
So glad you're with me. It's Live from My Office, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Live from My Office, a service of Monkey Run Productions. All rights reserved. The podcast is hosted by Steve Cochran, and it's mixed, edited, and produced by me, Ross Cochran. Support the show by subscribing wherever you're listening and by telling your friends about it. Follow Steve on all social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And make sure you check out this episode's show notes for relevant information discussed during the conversations. You can also email the show directly at thecochranshow@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And that's the best place to tell us about your favorite nonprofit so we can make sure we mention them on the next episode. Steve is available for corporate speaking gigs. He would love to MC your event. And occasionally, he's funny. Thank you for listening. Head to CochranShow.com for more.